Welcome everyone to the podcast, Soccer is Life. My name is Karim.
Axel speaking here. Welcome everybody. Champions League night. Finally getting around, doing a little summary for you guys.
Yeah, so this is a special episode. We're talking about the games on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah, man. God damn. What a hard Tuesday it was.
we'll get to it. We'll get to it. But let's have like a soft start and talk about Roma and Porto.
Yeah.
2-1 for Roma at home. What's happening? Roma, they do not seem that they're as strong as last year.
No, Roma, yeah. So last year they finished third in the Serie A. They were very strong in the Champions League. They knocked out Barcelona in a very crazy game. Then they faced Liverpool and it was too hard for them to mount.
Too hard to play against Salah.
Yeah, and you know, this season they're generally weaker. They're sixth right now in the Serie A.
Yeah.
I remember the coach, Eusebio Di Francesco, he was very good last year. He's not as good this year. They recruited players like Nzonzi, but you know, he's not really playing recently. I mean, they even got De Rossi to come in for him in this game, which is a bit questionable, I think, based on his age and, you know, his general mobility and all that stuff. But I guess the highlight of this game for me is Zaniolo, who scored a brace.
Yeah,
so this is a teenager who, I think he's the second teenager to score, second teenager ever to score in the Champions League knockout competition. How old is he? 19 years
19,
old.
19, man. Yeah. Yep.
So the story about this guy, he came to
AS Roma. He was an Internazionale.
Yeah, he was at Inter. So what happened is that they changed him for Nainggolan.
Yep.
Yeah, so Nainggolan this year has been obviously like phantom ghost, nowhere to be seen. He's having all kinds of like disciplinary problems. Like he was suspended for a little bit at Inter Milan.
Yeah.
Because apparently he was like betting and like, you know, he was just finding himself in situations in which he should not be a part of at all. Gambling problems, like owing money to like, you know, certain like weird figures, yeah. Type, you know, mafia type stuff, I think. So they exchanged Nainggolan for Zaniolo. Obviously, you can only think about how the Inter Milan fans are pissed at their directors, you know, for letting this guy go and in turn inheriting like a massive problem in Nainggolan. So that's the bit of the story that I see here. But you know, 2-1, good result at home. Porto.
A bit dangerous though, you know, because of the Porto goal.
Yeah. So Porto managed to get a goal in, which is it's a very important away goal. Sorry, and I mean it's because for Porto to go through, they will need to win what, like
1-0.
1-0. 1-0 is enough. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Roma only scored. Roma would have only scored 2 goals at home.
Yeah.
Porto 1 goal away, which count twice, and then 1 goal at home. So
Because
so, you know, they only need a 1-0. I remember last year at this stage, Porto played against Liverpool, and this is when they lost 5-0. At home, and I think it was the first time they lose at home in a really long time.
Porto is very strong at home though. Like when I say at home, I'm saying domestically speaking. I mean they barely lose, I think. Estadio da Luz is a very, very iconic stadium, of course.
Would you guess who would go through? Like, let's have a, you know, Roma or Porto
will go through.
Porto?
Yeah.
All right, man. I think I personally will gonna go with Roma.
Mm-hmm.
Just to contradict you once.
I mean, I would like for Roma to advance because Porto historically has always been in the Champions League, always there, you know, because they have a little bit of a dominance in Portugal. So, I mean, it'll be good if Roma can get through, but I think that Porto will take it home.
I think Roma has the quality to at least score a goal in Porto, and I think if they do so, it's going to be hard for Porto to score twice.
Yeah.
So
I think it's always better. Generally, I think it's always better to play the first game away. I think it's always good like that. You know, I would say that Porto are in a more advantageous position. You know what I mean?
All right, man. Let's go to the big disappointment for you, I guess. It was the biggest game this week. Man U and PSG.
Yeah, of course.
2-0. Pogba, red card. He's not going to play next game. Martial and Lingard were injured at
halftime. 2 or 3 weeks.
They're out for 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. So they're not even going to play against Liverpool in the Premier League, right?
Basically the season is over, guys. just kidding. So let's get into the game. I was obviously very excited about this game. I woke up very early that day. I prepared my work schedule around the game. It was a very, very important game, very crucial game. I haven't looked forward to a Champions League game as much in a long time. You know, recently our past Champions League campaigns have just been like, whatever, like we're there. We'll see what happens, kind of like. But this year is the first time in probably like 5 years that there's excitement. The last time would probably be when we played against Bayern Munich in 2014 when Moyes was there. You know, like that would be the last time.
So
I think we started the game very, very strongly. The first 20 minutes, we were at their neck. We were pressing very high.
Yeah, remember when we had the debate?
Pogba was making
last
those
episode,
runs.
Saying, is Manu going to play on the counter or is Solskjaer actually going to take the risk and press PSG? Yeah. And they were, and Manu was pressing at the beginning of the game, man. They were pressing high and they were actually trying to
get
the ball from PSG. It wasn't like a tactic of like sit down.
No.
Just against Tottenham. So, you know, that's, I think, a big plus to Solskjaer.
Yeah,
but
it was a very aggressive pressing in the early stages. You know, it forced some mistakes in PSG's backline as well. I remember Rashford was like dropping deep a little bit, and Kimpembe, I think, was given the task to follow Rashford. So Rashford was dropping deep and it was drawing Kimpembe with him. That's when we saw that crazy Pogba run where he just takes the ball from Rashford, goes to the wing, like takes Kimpembe with him as well, and then passes him very easily. Tries to put it in the box, but Buffon had a cover. We saw a similar action with Rashford, going straight to Buffon and shooting and causing him to, concede a corner. And then after the first 20 minutes, I think we dropped down a little bit. What happens, and this is like me watching the game and, you know, rewatching, reanalyzing, you know, time and time again. I think that we didn't really, like, our biggest mistake was not to capitalize the first 20 minutes. Like, all the early chances that we had, we should have scored early on. That would have been best for our morale and all that stuff. Then, I think that the players looked a bit shy. They looked a bit intimidated by PSG.
Yeah.
They didn't really rise to the occasion, which was, a bummer, I think, personally. Also, the biggest disappointment was Lingard and Martial, being taken off at halftime. I think that just killed the game
completely.
That just
changed the game, yeah.
Killed again completely, because before, when they were on the pitch, PSG was staying very down. They couldn't really adventure themselves and, you know, they couldn't have a high defensive line because of those three players, that front three. But, you know, Thomas Tuchel, you know, props to him. He recognized that, you know, no Martial, no Lingard, especially Lingard more than anything, actually.
Yeah.
Because he does the pressing. He starts the pressing. He initiates it. He dictates it. And when they saw that those two players are not there, like two of our best players were not there anymore, you know, second half, they started pressing at us. They started going at us. And, what I can say is, Marquinhos, he did a fantastic job on Pogba.
Man, Marquinhos and Verratti,
nullified him.
They had an amazing game.
Bro, they were the two outstanding players. Obviously, you know, different players. Verratti was just controlling the midfield. I've been telling to my friends that the guy was basically, he was texting. Like, during the game, he was texting while he was controlling the midfield. He was, like, looking at his phone, just texting away, being on Instagram, whatever. And then Marquinhos was on Pogba. Like, Pogba normally, you know, on an average, he has, like, about 62, 63, 65 passes. And this time he had about 31, which was, you know, basically cut in half. So to this end, like, Marquinhos basically cut Pogba's influence in two. Like, he just divided it completely.
Yeah, I think as you said, man,
he was outstanding.
As you said, the first 20 minutes, you know, you have this like adrenaline placebo effect. You're really excited, but you are right that Man U did not rise to the occasion, and I think it's because most of the squad or most of the influencing squad players in the squad are boys at the end of the day, man.
Yeah.
Like Lingard and Lingard and Martial, front and Rashford. I think the three of them, they're still not at the same level. You cannot compare their experience and mentality to players like Di Maria, to players like Dani Alves, David Silva. Thiago Silva, I'm sorry, Buffon. These players have, you know, years and years of experience in World Cups and Champions League.
Yeah.
And I think that was the big bummer, you know. Second thing, of course, I think Solskjaer made a really big mistake, in my opinion, in introducing Mata to the game and trying introducing Mata especially. Perhaps Sanchez deserved to be on, but I think like introducing those two players and trying to play exactly the same way as if Martial and Lingard are still on the field, I think was a big mistake.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, Rashford was the best one of those three, and he could not take either Mata or Sanchez out because he just introduced them. So that made Lukaku come to the game at the really end when basically Rashford was pretty tired and could not contribute more than that. So I think that was a big tactical mistake. I think it was a big bummer, a big shocker to have to do two substitutions at halftime. But for me, he would have managed it maybe a little bit better if he have introduced Sanchez and Lukaku and then try to change the tactics a little bit to suit style of play more with Lukaku on the field, man.
Yeah, so the other mistake was to remove Rashford when Lukaku got on. Because I think that at this point, when you're 2-0 down, you have about 10 minutes left or so, you're at home.
Yeah.
Like, you can still try to grab the momentum. And I think that you have more chances if you have two people up top. So if you had a Rashford and a Lukaku up top, I think it'll be better like that. But then again, yeah. So I had that, obviously, there are two obvious problems in this team. In that if there's no Pogba, no party. There's no creative force in the team. Like if a player in the opposition team does a job on Pogba, where else is the creativity going to come from? Where is the... Is there another creative outlet? And the response is that there isn't another creative outlet. Another creative outlet in this type of team could be the fullbacks. Young, there's nothing going on in terms of, attacking-minded, like nothing at all. Shaw, I think he's still very, very short and not as fit as he should be. And Herrera, I guess he's there. You know, he's an amazing player right now. He's a little bit of our Arturo Vidal from when Pogba was playing at Juventus. He's been one of the best players since Solskjaer started.
Yeah.
And another mistake was Matic. Matic, he was left by himself because in a way we played 4-1-4-1. Martial, Pogba, Herrera, Lingard were on the same line.
Yeah.
And Matic, like, he had a mountain to climb because essentially players like Draxler, Di Maria were dropping in between the lines, and Matic was finding himself like 3-1, 2-1. So I think a tactical switch could have been to drop Herrera back with Matic and leave Pogba as a number 10 like that. And the other mistake obviously is Sanchez. Sanchez cannot play on the left. I'm sorry, but he just can't play on the left. I don't know if it's...
You would rather like see him as a false nine?
Or... I want to see him as a false nine, or I want to see him try the on the wing.
Okay.
On the right wing, sorry.
You mean, okay.
I don't know if it's like in his contract that he can't start on the right... He's just never played on the right wing for us, ever.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why. I don't know if it's in the contract.
Yeah.
But yo, sometimes people put crazy things like this in contracts.
Mean, you know, like Rabiot, he wanted to put in his contract that you can't put him as a number 6 or whatever.
I mean, it's incredible.
It is what it is.
So on the left, it's very problematic because that's where Pogba has a lot of influence. And when Pogba and Sanchez are playing at the same time,
yeah,
they are in each other's pockets.
Yeah,
which means that Sanchez is what Martial does that Sanchez cannot do. Martial stays on the wing.
It's dribble on the wing actually.
And dribbles on the wing. Yeah. Accelerates. Gets to the byline. Yeah. Sanchez, he can't. He has to do that whole Arsenal thing that he used to do when he was there, which is, you know, a little bit of what Neymar does, I guess, in Brazil.
Yeah,
he's on the wing, but like he drops, you know, he does that diagonal run. Yeah. He's like just outside the box, but like on the left hand side on that half space, and that's incredibly dangerous because Luke Shaw is extremely exposed. He's by himself. Luke Shaw had Dani Alves and Kerrer on him. He couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Same thing on the right. When Mata is playing, Mata is not a right winger. Mata is not a winger. He's not fast. He doesn't have the legs anymore. He can't do it at all, you know?
Yeah.
We can't put Mata on the right wing because it's like playing with nine players. And same thing, when Mata plays on the right as a right winger, Ashley Young is exposed.
Especially, I think, for me, defensively, defensively, Mata, he cannot do the job.
Yeah, we already
and that,
know.
And that was one of the reasons Mourinho sold him when he was at Chelsea.
Yeah.
So I don't understand it.
Same thing for him when he's on the right wing. Ashley Young, very exposed. He has Di Maria and Bernat on his side. And we saw what happened. Bro, you can't... It's one versus two every single time. One versus two every single time. Ever since Mata came to Manchester United, we've never used him in his proper position. We've never used him as a number 10. I think that if Mata is on the pitch, he should be on the pitch only as a number 10. I don't want to see him on the wing unless we're playing like some team like Fulham or freaking Huddersfield, like whatever, a bum-ass opposition, you know?
Come on, man.
You can't...
Have some respect to the other teams.
I mean, you can't have Mata
playing
as a right winger when you're playing a PSG, a Real Madrid, or a Barcelona. You're just going to get killed.
Yeah.
And what I have to say about PSG, props to them, props to Thomas Tuchel, because... He killed this thing. He was he played some mind games, I think, a little bit. He was complaining constantly in the press conferences about, you know, oh, I don't have Neymar, I don't have Cavani,
I don't have a midfield player.
I don't have a midfield. Yeah,
Verratti just came back recently, playing with Marquinhos in the middle. But both of them actually.
Sometimes it can be very negative for a coach to do this kind of shit because the message it sends to the players is like very negative. Like, okay, like we still have us. You know, what the fuck? Like, are we like not useful for this team? But I think that while he was doing that publicly, he might have told his players like, yo guys, don't worry about it, like don't listen to me when I'm talking to the public, because I think that he was preparing them psychologically pretty well. Mbappe, I spoke about him last week about how I'm not sure about his abilities to like hold a line just by himself, and the fact that I think he needs a partner in Cavani or somebody up top with him. And he was told, because normally he touches the ball very, very frequently in a PSG game. And Thomas Tuchel told him, you know what? You're not going to touch the ball as much this game.
Yeah.
What you got to do is just put yourself forward there like that. Go for those through balls. We're going to use your pace as an attacking outlet. If you feel like you're not touching the ball as much, don't throw away your tools, basically.
Yeah, I mean, don't get frustrated.
Like, don't get frustrated. Stay in the game.
That's what can happen.
And don't drop deep too much. Like, stay focused, stay in the game. You'll have your chances. And that's what happened, because in the first 45 minutes, they didn't really have anything. I think there was an action on De Gea, but that might have been in the second half even.
Yeah.
But in the second half is when his confidence grew, when we didn't have Martial and Lingard anymore, and PSG started pressing heavily. So, you know, Tuchel, I think you did a great job on that. As far as us, I don't know where this leaves us. I don't see us coming back from this, because 2-0 at home,
it's a lot, and
like not even one goal, and especially without Pogba.
To be honest, with the kind of players in both teams, I think like Manu is more like a boys' team, and this is like I'm playing against men. Where I think Manu is really still building a team. Still have a lot of youngsters. So I don't think that the squad is at the maturity of the PSG players.
No, not at all. Far and miles away.
And I think that's what makes the biggest difference.
Yeah. So really, I mean, honestly, yo, this team, if we play again in 3 weeks, I think, 2 weeks, sorry, no Pogba, no Lingard, no Martial.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
I mean, just with no Pogba, it's already tough, because he's the creative force in the team. And, you know, you could say that maybe you can replace a Pogba with, like, a freaking Fred. But he hasn't been playing at all, really. I don't think that he will get started this year. I think that we'll focus more next year for him. So we can't replace him. A player like Andres Pereira, it's not exactly the same position, and he's not as physical as Pogba, so you can't replace him either. Mata, he can replace
maybe,
Pogba.
Maybe, but if you play with two defensive midfielders and he plays as a 10,
yeah,
maybe.
But yeah, because what makes Pogba amazing for us is the fact that he has everything. He has pace.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that he has pace, but he has long legs and he's tall.
Yeah.
So I mean, he runs.
He runs, man.
When he's running, he has such a weird running style that when he runs, it doesn't seem like he's running. It feels like a horse who's just
taking
like
big steps, man.
Big steps, yeah, yeah, yeah. but when you see the player that's next to him,
yeah,
who's trying to catch up to him, yeah, I mean, it's like
not easy.
You saw Kimpembe how he was skinned against him.
Yeah, man.
So Pogba has the strength to hold the ball. He can run very heavy, very, very fast. He does everything. He's what you want in a midfielder. So I don't think there's a player in this team who can replace him. And obviously, if you don't have a Lingard, it's gone. So right now, I think what's left for us is we either play a 4-4-2, and we have to see who's going to be at the base of that midfield diamond. I would suggest Rashford and Lukaku as a front two, split strikers. Or if you want to continue playing the same style, which is a 4-3-3. We should have. We should bring somebody from the academy now. We should bring a player like Tahis Chong, because he's also fast. He has pace for days. He has legs for days.
Okay.
So we can jump in that position. I don't know what to do with Alexis Sanchez. I mean, even Soldier said, I don't know what to do. There's nothing I can do anymore for him.
Yeah,
like he has to find himself. So
yeah.
Right now, it's a crucial time for him. It's for a lot of fans have given up on him already. There's just no signs that he's going to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit like...
Especially at his age. He's not getting younger.
It's a little bit like when Falcao came to United. But to Falcao's credit, he had a fucking ACL and he was operated on his knee.
Yeah.
So you can't come back from that at 29, 30 years old. Sanchez, he didn't really have an injury. So I don't know what's going on with him. You know, I don't know if it's a mental thing or whatsoever. But right now, he is literally not...
Providing anything
to the team, so yeah.
All right, man. Let's go to the other Premier League team.
Yeah,
Tottenham playing Dortmund 3-0. You know, I was watching this game, man, and I left at 1-0. Predicting that nothing would happen.
Yeah, I was impressed,
but I was really impressed and surprised that even when Tottenham was up 1-0, they looked more dangerous. They had more possession of the ball. They literally dominated the game.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Dortmund did not have maybe four of their players.
Royce wasn't there.
Weigl,
Lucas Piszczek wasn't there.
Piszczek was not here. Weigl was not here. They did not maybe have four of their starting players, but they still had Sancho, Pulisic, Kudze, Witzel was here.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I don't know what to say, but Tottenham really had this game, and I think we can a little bit make the same comparison of boys against men. I think the Tottenham players, their age and their experience compared to the Dortmund players, I think, you know, makes a lot of difference. And then, you know, credits to Tottenham because they are playing without their best player, Harry Kane. So
Dele Alli is not there either. So yeah,
Dyer is not there.
Yeah,
so
I was surprised because I thought Tottenham really bust the game. I thought that it was an interesting formation as well. What he did, you know, that 3-4-3
in the back,
and having Vertonghen as a left back,
but he played
left back
a second half or a lot of time. He played almost like a
he wasn't
left
a
well, wing
left,
man.
He was a left
like a wing back.
Wing back, exactly. Left wing back.
He was attacking a lot.
He had an assist. He had
a goal. Amazing assist and amazing
he was the
goal
man on
as well.
I think he was the man on the match. And we love that celebration as well. The Superman, chest costume, whatever you want to call it. But Vertonghen had a brilliant game. Eriksen was amazing as well, and of course, Heung-min Son delivering as always.
Here's the thing, man.
Player.
I think Pochettino really, really studied the Dortmund team and really knew that they are very weak in crosses because, you know, if you see the both goals of like Son and Vertonghen, they were crosses. The goal of Llorente was a corner kick as well. And I think, he really made it on purpose. I think tactically, he really knew, they really knew how to beat Dortmund. And you know, one of the reasons that you always, one of the reasons that you play three in the back is to have two wingers or two midfielders that can go as much up as they can, and they can cross the ball. And I think that's the reason also Aurier played, because if you see his cross to Vertonghen, it was an amazing cross, man. So I think tactically Pochettino really just beat Dortmund on his own, man. It was brilliant.
Yeah, so I mean, I think right now, like 3-0 is a lot. So I don't know what's going to happen when they play in Germany, but I just can't see, I just can't see Dortmund like scoring three without a response from Tottenham, you know, and 3-0 will send it to extra time. So I don't see them winning like a 4-0 or something like that. Also, the fact that they didn't score away from home, that makes the task a little bit harder, because you know for sure that Tottenham will be able to score. I'm disappointed by this Dortmund team, because I thought that they've been brilliant so far.
They're first in the Bundesliga, winning. I think they're 5 points ahead of Bayern.
5 points ahead, yeah. So they've been one of the best teams in Europe, actually, so far this season. I would say, you know, the Dortmunds, the Juve, the I guess I can say PSG if we're talking like domestically. But the last three games haven't really been, you know, they've been knocked out of the German Cup competition, yeah. Whatever DFB Pokal, whatever they call it. They were also this past weekend, I think they were winning 3-0 against Offenheim. 3-0 at the 65th minute, and the game ended 3-3. So I don't know if mentally they've dropped down, they've dropped a little bit, but they have fantastic players. They have a fantastic coach in Lucien Favre, who's been tremendous this season and has actually surprised a lot of people. However, I just don't see them making up for this 3-0. If they do, then Tottenham should be banned from the competition for 5 years. Just like PSG should have been banned from the competition for 5 years for throwing away a 4-0 lead, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was tactically, man, you know, for me, kudos to Pochettino. He really prepared his team, played the right tactics, did a lot of crosses, you know, played Vertonghen and Aurier on purpose as wingbacks, and that's what made him win the game.
Yeah.
All right, man, let's move on to the last game for this week, Ajax against Real Madrid, and the controversial...
I hate this, man. I wasn't really watching the game, but I saw 1-0 for Ajax. You know, first of all, Ajax, obviously very, very iconic team. Won the Champions League with players who were 18 years old when Van Gaal was at the helm. Players like, you know, freaking Kluivert, Seedorf was there. Like, pure youngsters. So, it's the first time in a couple of years that they're back in the Champions League, I think. Even their local, like the Eredivisie, they haven't won that in a little bit, I think. But yeah, I had faith in them, you know, because they were at home. And this Real Madrid team hasn't exactly...
It's very shaky this year.
Madrid, yeah, exactly. They haven't been firing, you know. But we know that, you know, they're the king of this competition in a way, because they've done this for 3 years in a row already. Like, they know how to play the game. They know how to play the competition, even if they're not at their strongest. Yo, let's talk about that first goal that was disallowed from for Ajax. What the hell happened with that shit?
I don't know if it was like a confusion. Maybe the referees are still not used to looking at videos and making judgment based on them. But in a normal word, I think there's no foul and it's a 1-0 for Ajax.
So. I think it's bullshit, because even the Ajax coach was talking at the end of the game. This is the he says he had two different explanations for this goal being disallowed. Number one. Like, one referee, one person of the referee crew told him, oh, it's because there was an offside. And another person of the referee body told him, oh, it's because the player was interfering with Courtois, able to impact in the game. Which is like, okay, first of all, that's not even close to being acceptable. You're a coach of, let's say, the underdog this time around.
Yeah.
And you feel like you've been robbed of a goal. And the justification that you get
are shaky. It's not even.
It's like that. It's not even something concrete.
Yeah.
I mean, it really feels like, you know, David versus Goliath, because that goal should have never been disallowed. I don't think that there was offside. I think the confusion can come from the fact that there's a quick I'll say like three sequences in like one single action.
Yeah.
Where like the player is offside, and then like literally a second later he's not offside anymore, and then a second later he's offside again. Blah 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 blah. So I think that's where the confusion came from. But ultimately, I saw the pictures. I saw the video again.
Yeah, no,
I don't see him being offside.
Yeah.
And I don't see the player interfering with Courtois. Courtois is freaking like 7'5".
Yeah. And then,
like, come on.
And then, you know, another controversy, like, this game is full of controversies, man. Another controversy was the Ramos yellow card. I think he was smart to get the yellow card, but then he wanted to show everyone how smart he is and made the mistake of letting everyone know, yeah, you know, I had it in my mind thinking about the other game, blah, blah, blah.
Bro,
and
now, I remember when Mourinho
told him, Xabi
Alonso to get a second yellow, actually. At the time, you know, I love that type of shit. You know, I love the dark cards, whatever, sinister shit like that. But then this time around, okay, in the game, I didn't watch it, so I didn't really notice, of course. But then I hear this interview of Ramos saying that, I didn't hear the interview, I saw it on Bleacher Report, what he said in the interview, which was along the lines of, you know, I mean, I think I will be lying to you guys if I told you that I didn't do it on purpose, you know. Honestly, not to disrespect the opposition, not to underestimate the opposition, in this case, Ajax. But I feel like, you know, I could be more important in other games, you know. And first of all, I was like sending this to like a couple of my buddies, you know, in group chats and all that shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, how is this player like actually admitting this? And apparently, I've read some other reports, even the guy who was interviewing him, who was holding the microphone, he was kind of like looking around him, like at his colleagues, like, wait, is this motherfucker for real? Like, he's really coming clean with this shit?
Yeah, yeah.
And now, new videos have surfaced today that actually show Ramos communicating with his bench, asking him if he should go for the yellow card.
Okay.
And of course, they say, yeah, you should.
Yeah.
And then he does it. And yeah, so now he goes from a position of being banned from
one game,
you know, which is the Ajax
game in Madrid.
In Madrid, now it could be three games.
I think two.
It could be two to three.
Yeah, 2 to 3. But
because you're not supposed to do that
shit. You know how Madrid are strong in the UEFA, so I think if they ban him, it's gonna be two games.
Yeah. So stupid.
But I predict that we might see a surprise and Ajax might actually do something at Madrid, because I think the youngsters are really motivated.
I hope we see a surprise.
I think they're having one of their best seasons. A lot of their players, I think Barcelona and PSG are almost going to get into a fight to snatch a lot of their youngsters.
Yeah, this is still these are straight bullets from the Neymar transfer, by the way. Everything that's going on, it always involves Neymar. Barcelona is kind of salty that, you know, PSG took their player like this. So they're always going to go with, you know, in tussles like this for players. We already know that they signed Frankie de Jong, who's one of the best rated midfielders in the world right now.
Yeah.
Huge talent. We also know that Matias de Ligt, who's the youngest captain ever, 19 years old, leading a team.
Yeah.
Champions League. I mean, what were you doing at 19, bro?
I don't know, man. I was at school, probably.
This guy is captaining like the city of his town, his hometown.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a hero. And, you know, they have exciting players like Ziyech as well. It's very, very interesting. Obviously, Dusan Tadic, who was at Southampton in the Premier League. Daley Blind, who was also let go by Manchester United. I think it was a big mistake. But anyway, we have a lot of players who are very silky, very ball players. And you know, it's Ajax, you know, we know the blueprint already. Tagliafico is also a player who's very influential, and he's the one who scored that disallowed goal. Listen, maybe the fact that Ramos is not there could change something.
I think so.
Like, offensively though, we got to talk about Vinicius Jr. Because he didn't start the season. He was a very, very expensive purchase. But he started the season. He was in the B team. Because Lopetegui didn't, you know, fancy him, I guess. And Solari was the B team coach. Obviously, now he's been promoted to the first team coach. And he decided to bring him on, you know. Kudos to him. Because, man, he is changing things around for Real Madrid. He is, you know, Benzema used to be like the pizza delivery boy for Ronaldo. Higuain was the same before. But now Benzema has his own pizza delivery boy. in Vinicius. I mean, right now they're really creating a strong chemistry in this team. There's Bale on the right side, but
useless.
I don't want to talk about this guy really. Luka Modric is back to his best as well. Toni Kroos playing like before. Casemiro is also becoming more and more influential. So I think this is a sign of, you know, I want to say experience and, you know, growing into the season, because they're not as they were not strong in the beginning, but now that it's crunch time, February up until April, that's when you really, really gotta be on your shit.
They look better than before.
They're already 5 points behind Barcelona.
That's true, yeah.
And we feel like they've lost probably like 34 times already this season.
Yeah.
No, but seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, shout out to them. I mean, I would really love for them to be eliminated from the competition, of course.
Yeah.
I really, really hate Real Madrid. I like Benzema and Sergio Ramos though.
Yeah.
For different reasons, but I hate the team, man. I want him to be good.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll talk about it in the upcoming episodes, guys. So that was it for the specials champion.
The champion.
We'll be back next week. We'll talk about Premier League and Champions League, hopefully next week as well. Or we might divide it into two episodes. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Let's see. Maybe we should do another Champions League episode because we don't really have Premier League games this weekend. So yeah. We can do another one on Wednesday or Thursday.
All right, guys, that's it.
All right, take care.
Peace.
Thank you.